Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Matty. I'm excited about the summer being here. It was really hot yesterday, and I had to do some stuff downtown, so I did my first ride downtown on the bike in the blazing concrete canyon, and boy, did I sleep last night.
I was going to say, how sweaty were you?
Oh, man, and I had a backpack on my back that was full. So it was one of those where you come home, and you actually feel how wet your back is, and it's like someone super soakered you.
Now you do the cool shower before bed technique, I'm assuming.
I do, because I'm one of those people that's like, I think I'm like part reptile or something, because I seem to, whatever the temperature of the room is, that's what temperature I am. Yeah. I don't seem to have my own internal heat or cooling system.
Like on days like that, you really appreciate air conditioning. You can break it down. You really only need air conditioning for like 18 days of the year. But man, those 18 days are handy.
That's a really good point. It's almost like a shootout specialist. Do you need one every game? No. But sometimes you do.
Yeah. The air conditioning is the TJ Oshie of my household.
Ooh, look at you, applied knowledge. I have an old home, and so the ventilation in general sucks. So the upstairs is like a wood-burning oven. Yeah. And the basement is like a deep freezer. Mm-hmm. It's the weirdest thing. You can be in the basement watching TV, go up to bed, and experience a 40-degree change in temperature.
They call that a diurnal shift.
Who are you today?
You're not going to be happy, Bob. That's a term that we use in the wine world to explain why you can make wine in hot regions, because if you've got high altitude, the shift in temperature at night allows for the wines to develop the crisp acidity that is needed.
So it's actually not a diurnal. I believe you may have mispronounced it. I believe it's a diurnal shift, because that would be from day to night, hence diurnal. And what I'm talking about is simply, mine is more like a tiered layer cake. But that's I would go to cake for the analogy.
Yeah. You went to cake. I'm pretty good with the cake analogies, but that's like all old. It's so crazy. Just the Goldilocks and the Three Bears porridge temperature thing that happens.
Yeah, none of the rooms are just right, which is why we go out into we go outside in the evening and we hose ourselves down.
Nice.
Old school styles.
I was hoping you'd have like rocking chairs and you'd be drinking lemonade as you were waving yourself with a fan.
Oh, that's such a good move. Is it actually work waving yourself with a fan?
I doubt it.
Yeah. I think it's a placebo.
Yeah. But that's okay. Fool me, fool my brain. Give me all the placebos.
Yeah, exactly. Matt, there's so many things happening in sports right now.
There is.
So many things. Is there anywhere you would like to start?
Yes, I'm glad you'd asked. I wanted to start with what everyone is talking about, the Atlanta Hawks.
I've been obsessed. Ever since that Dwayne Dedman trade, what were they thinking?
Good reference by you. That one's even more obscure than my TJ Oshie one's not actually obscure at all. But like the NBA, they're going to be painting Black Lives Matter on the courts in Orlando. And that's a good idea. Keep that image going. Keep that name out there. And maybe some young kids who don't really know, they see what that's about and they do research and they learn. And that's great. Like, that's legitimately a good thing. But it's not really tangible. Well, the Atlanta Hawks, they are turning their arena, the State Farm Arena, into a huge voting station for upcoming elections in August, and then the big one on November 3rd. And the plan was decided by the coach, the CEO, and the majority owner of the Hawks, and they did it in conjunction with the local government. So this is going to happen, and I thought this is fantastic. Like, this is, you know, and it's not the biggest or the end-all thing, but this is a real tangible move by a team to try to deal with inequality. I think it's fantastic.
So you may not know this, but how much of the original ownership / upper management is left over from when Atlanta, there was that leak that they were worried about not having enough white players because it would scare away people from the suburbs?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Back like 15 years ago or so. And there was concern that the team wasn't white enough. And I'm maybe misremembering the story, but that was the gist of it.
Yeah, I think the GM got in trouble. I think it was even sooner than 15 years ago. But yeah, and like, I don't have the details in front of me, but yes, that there, what you are remembering is absolutely, there's a lot of truth there.
Yeah, I'm going to do a quick search. I'm just going to type in Atlanta Hawks racism into my phone just to see. Okay, no, they're all okay. Yeah, Atlanta Hawks discipline GM Danny Ferry for racist comments. And it was something about Luol Deng.
Yes. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, having a little African in him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that's not exactly how I remembered it, but.
You know, there still was a racist opinions coming out from someone in high management, and now, you know, this management group has decided to open it up, and there's 680,000 square feet of room to work with. And if you remember back to elections that were going on in early June in Atlanta, you had voting problems within 10 minutes of the polls opening, wait times up to 7 hours, machines not working. This is great.
Sorry to interrupt, Matt, but I've just been reading through this thing. So this was from an article. An internal investigation revealed that there was an email sent by someone named Levinson, who I haven't discovered, but it said, the black crowd scared away the whites, and there simply are not enough affluent black fans to build a significant season ticket base. So that was from, looks like, 2014.
Yeah.
And co-owner Bruce Levinson but he announced that he was selling his controlling share of the team following the release of his racially inflammatory comments in an email to Ferry and the team's other owners. So it seems like, while not quite the LA Clippers and Donald Sterling, that there's a history of racial mishandling there and prejudice.
Yep.
So maybe this is a good organization to do it because they've got some stuff to amend.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's the election issues problems in June. And guess what? And this goes to my bigger point. Part of that arena was funded by the public tax dollars. Right. So here's my message. Unless you're Golden State or Toronto, but they can do it as well, every other team has to open up their arena for a program like this. Because guess what? Taxpayer money helped pay for those stadiums or arenas.
It'd be worth investigating what goes into making your site available, a private site available for a public function. If I think about it here in Canada, it's mostly churches and like libraries and stuff, but yeah. I can't think of any private businesses that are ever, I guess what would be the word, sanctioned, authorized for being voting sites. Can you think of any public, like, there are no private places in Canada, right?
No, every place I voted, it's either been a church or a large gym, like right around Parliament and the Esplanade, which is where I've done all my voting for the last like 15 years.
Yeah, exactly. So I wonder, like, if they're even allowed to do it down there, or if there is any rules that prevent them as a private business from being involved in the electoral process.
But these stadiums were funded with public money. Like Minnesota, you know, where a lot of this, well, not it all started, but, you know, that's where the murder of George Floyd was. The Twins and the Vikings received in total between the two arenas or stadiums, whatever you want to call it, $854 million from the taxpayer. Open up those arenas and stadiums if you know you need help with voting.
This isn't a way to contradict what you're saying, but I feel like most big businesses get public money, don't they? In one form or another, at the very not subsidies, at least tax breaks. But at any rate, yeah, that's a point. You would have to be a pretty brazen racist to walk into an arena with Black Lives Matter written on the floor and then not vote progressive.
Well, I mean, if you want to get in that debate, there'll be, well, what have the Democrats done and all this. But I mean, right now, bleep all that. What I love is the idea that Washington, the Washington Nationals, they got hundreds and hundreds of millions, and the current president should love it because the ultimate expression of a free democracy is the right to vote. So they should 100% be for this.
I would think all the teams would be. It would be good outreach to the communities, particularly in Georgia, as you say, because there have been so many problems with voting. Mm-hmm. But then you get into the whole districting thing. Would it only be in the district that the arena is in, or could you actually have people from other districts come in? Because it seems to me a lot of the problems are in areas that are really poor. Yep. And I got to believe the arena is not in one of them. I don't know that, but I doubt it's in one of the most economically challenged areas. I doubt that. So I don't know. Could you bring in people from other areas?
And if you couldn't, what you could do is at the very least, you open these arenas and the owners, hey, you can fit the bill for making sure everything runs correctly. That leaves you with now money that would have been spent in those areas, and you can direct it to areas that need it more. Like now you're going to be able to free up time and money and manpower if you have to vote within your district.
You know, I would look into that before I make that point, though, because it's possible as a private business, you may not be able to pay for anything involved in the electoral process, or else there could be claims of fraud or bias. Well,
but the State Farm Arena, they have gotten they got permission to do it. Like they worked with the local government. The local government approved of a plan by the Hawks to turn the arena just into a polling station. And, cool. You know, what should be, this is not a political thing. This is not being pro-left or pro-right. This is being pro-democracy. It's as simple as that.
I don't think you'd ever get her, but you know who'd be a fantastic guest on this? Mm. The mayor of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Do you guys chase guests anymore, or are you just talking AMC?
Oh, no, we chase guests. We still chase guests all the time. We've been trying to get some politicians from Orlando. I want Orlando politicians on the show. Because Orlando is the mecca of sports, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Is Landsberg still on the air? Because he would love that kind of thing.
He's on vacation this week.
Mm-hmm.
But nice. Yes, he is still on the air. Yeah, no, these kind of stuff he would absolutely love.
Okay, so like one of the things you do in business is whenever you come up with an idea, you attack yourself. You basically game it out and see how could my idea fail. So what are the reasons it's not a good idea?
I don't really know. I mean, this is just to make sure everyone can vote. Who would be against that? Like what constituency would go, I'm not going to support the Atlanta Hawks because State Farm Arena is now going to help make it so people aren't waiting 7 hours in line?
I don't think this should matter, but I wonder if at some point they think, you know, Republicans may hold it against the Atlanta Hawks because the arena itself is branded with Black Lives Matter. It shouldn't matter. And I think it probably speaks to how the changing economics are. People are like, big businesses are terrified to be seen on the wrong side of history now.
Yeah.
So that's great. And if they've been shamed or forced into it, awesome. Because apparently just doing it for the right reasons wasn't good enough. So I got no problem with that. If I don't know enough about it the way you do, Matt, but it sounds like I'm really excited and interested to see how the NBA allows its players to approach this. Even last night, Fred VanVleet was talking about, I just saw this on the crawl, because I was watching the old Ali Frazier fights last night on TSM. So good. But just about how it's not opportune that they're opening up, you know, for business again. And he's worried that it could be a distraction, you know, socially.
Yeah.
But I'm really curious to see how the NBA facilitates its own players' desires to make this a very political process.
So am I. And I think the great thing is the relationship between the union and the owners and the commissioner is so much better than the other sports that I think, you know, it will be able to happen. And also, because as long as, you know, the top stars like LeBron want it to happen, it's going to happen. And LeBron also is doing voting stuff with teaming up with putting together a movement called More Than a Vote to help make sure the same kind of thing that the Hawks are doing.
Yeah, which is the thing that I love about the NBA, well, amongst the many things, but its players are really savvy as a group, I think, in a way that is not true of the other sports. There may be savvy individuals in the other sports, but as a league, the NBA just knows how to get its message across.
And it's because the stars get to rule it because, again, of the impact they have on the court, because they're not wearing a helmet, because they have longer careers than, say, football. All these things help to contribute.
ESPN did a week-long series on behind the scenes of the decision and how it really came to be. It's been very interesting. I highly recommend it for anybody. But the point was made how that was the first meaningful shot fired in the war against the old way of doing things. That what basically LeBron did was he created a new kind of superstar that had a different kind of power over his own future. And maybe now we're starting to see a different iteration of that, where it's not just about earning power and branding power, but it's going to become about social power too. It's so interesting and maybe even really important to see who can make the jump between being a brand that sells stuff and who's a brand that does stuff.
Everybody. And this is, I agree. Sorry to interrupt. And this is by the Hawks. It's not, you know, life changing, but it is an actual tangible, you know, good thing that they're doing. And the one name I now look at is Jerry Jones. The guy is silent. He loves a microphone. The Cowboys, their big giant stadium, got $444 million of taxpayer money. So to Jerry, maybe you should be opening up your stadium there if it can help with voting.
I do feel like the NFL has been shamed into taking a stronger position on a lot of things. I see now that Ava DuVernay is doing a series with Netflix on the life of Colin Kaepernick, a scripted series about young Kaepernick.
Yep.
That's still a hot potato that the league hasn't solved, but there have been so many things that they've done wrong recently. I'm also really curious. The NBA, I'm curious to see for the creativity. The NFL, I'm curious to see for the almost the activation of a group of players who have been kept pretty quiet for a long time. They've run an awfully tight ship. I don't think they can do that moving forward. They're going to have to bend. They've already figured that out clearly. I'm really curious to see how much they're willing to bend. I think the NBA
has a solution.
What's that?
I have a solution for the NFL.
What's that?
Now, you can go to your local office. And you could legally change your last name, correct, Bob Mackiewicz?
Sure. I wanted to change it to Trent Freebird when I was in grade 8.
Perfect. So what if a lot of the top quarterbacks and maybe, say, a quarterback wideout combo like, say, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones or Tom Brady and Mike Evans, what if they all legally changed their last name to Kaepernick?
Oh, my God. That is such a ridiculous idea. But then there would be, what, like 700 Kaepernicks in the league?
You just need to sprinkle enough. Like, you know when the NFL does a promo coming up, Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers taking on Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings. Aaron Kaepernick taking on Kirk Kaepernick. The announcers would have to say it the whole time. It would be out there. It would be hilarious. Maybe it's not the same as making sure all the citizens can vote, but it would, I'd be down for it.
You know what, Matt, I've known you a long time and you don't surprise me very often. You entertain all the time, but I can honestly say I did not see that suggestion coming.
I came up with it. I was sitting in my cottage on Sunday, and I came up with that idea, and I just started giggling. I'm like, yeah, why not?
How many wines?
It was the morning, so only two.
Yeah, it was the morning, so only two. He said, crying for help.
I was crying for help because I'm running out of this Riesling. Help! Help me!
So we're talking football. It seems like, how do we go this long and not mention the fact that the New England Patriots have found a way to become fascinating again? Is it going to work, Cam Newton to the Patriots for 1 year?
First, you know what? The great thing, first off, thank you again to New England for saving us in sports media. You do it over and over and over again, and we will never forget what you've done for us. So that's the first thing. Like, literally, New England, Brady, Gronk, thank you for your service.
Okay, from a football standpoint, now that you've got the gratitude, yeah. Is he salvageable?
Yes, absolutely. He absolutely is salvageable. There's been a lot of other quarterbacks, like, and Bill Barnwell listed it in his column in ESPN. You know, he mentions a guy like Ryan Tannehill went through a couple of years of horrible injuries. And, you know, he's now earning lots of money and had a nice run with the Tennessee Titans. So it does happen. And in 2018, before the foot injury in the first half of the year, you know, Cam Newton was playing very well. He wasn't top elite, but he was like top somewhere between 11 and 8, maybe even a little bit higher in the NFL. And then you marry him with a team that is very smart, that will work to his, you know, to his skill set. And also, in New England, this is going to be a team based on defense. They've spent more money on, like, guards and in their offensive line than almost any other team. And they're playing in a lousy division. This is a perfect spot for reinvention for Cam Newton.
Well, my guaranteed two wins for the Bills against New England don't feel as guaranteed now. Yeah. If you're Belichick, do you expect to change your system to suit Cam Newton, or do you expect him to bend and play a little bit more like they have done traditionally? Like, they've been built around one specific talent for so long. How long does it take to figure out a new system with a quarterback that's really very different? I'm curious to see how long it takes them to figure out. They obviously feel like they can do it, or they wouldn't have made the move. But how long does it take for comfort to exist on both sides? I can't wait to see that.
And that's going to be a tough one because of COVID, because you can't, you know, training. I mean, unless you're Tom Brady, and then, you know, you're just having, you're having practices still every day in the middle of a target. It's going to, like, that's the hard part, is it's going to take time. Both sides are going to have to, you know, be comfortable with compromise. But if any team is going to do it, it's going to be Belichick. Remember, this was the defense running game team in the early 2000s. Then, you know, they had Randy Moss and went balls out wideouts. Then they went Aaron Hernandez and Gronkowski and were a tight end-based offense. And then they won a Super Bowl with very little offense when they beat the Rams. So they can do it in a different bunch of ways. And Cam Newton, in 2018, they were doing more short passes. It wasn't just go deep, and if you throw an interception, don't worry about it. We'll get them next time. So, I mean, the parts are there to make this work.
Does this mean that the best wide receiver Cam Newton's ever had is still going to be Steve Smith Jr.?
Absolutely.
He probably deserves somebody a little better.
Well, I mean, Steve Smith, we won't do the wide receiver rankings, but your bigger point, your bigger picture there is a correct one, is that for a lot of years, you know, he sometimes have a good offensive line, maybe a good running back, but he never was really surrounded with top-level talent, with the exception, obviously, of Greg Olsen, who's going to be a Hall of Fame tight end. And he's kind of going into that with New England, where there isn't that elite skill set, bunch of players.
It's going to be fun to watch how they use him creatively and just how they figure each other out. I'd be curious to see how Cam Newton adjusts to the New England style. And does the New England style adjust to him? And I mean, off the field as much as, you know, like, is there an organization in sports that says button down is New England Patriots? I mean, what's going to happen at that first press conference when Cam Newton starts firing his mouth off? I guess they could live with Gronk, but Gronk didn't seem like he was wild. He just seemed like he was, you know,
frat boy.
He was like, you know, yeah, exactly. He was a human burrito.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it will be different. But remember also, Cam Newton had a great relationship with the old owner of the Panthers, Jerry Richardson, who had to leave because of some Me Too stuff that seemed to get buried. He also was around with Dave Gettleman, who's pretty buttoned down. I think it'll work. I don't worry about that at all. Here's the thing: in the end, if it doesn't work, you cut him, and it's going to cost like 1% of your salary cap. This is the definition of, you know, win-win. I mean, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Slow down the development of Jarrett Stidham? That's about it.
Mm-hmm. You got to love the NFL for its ruthless ways. It certainly does allow for more experimentation. Speaking of experimentation, yep. Matt, do you mind if I switch gears here?
Of course not.
Okay, so were you on team the NHL's a joke or team, wow, who saw this coming? This is fun during a period where we don't have hockey, going back to the draft lottery.
I'm always team fun. It's great. It's fantastic. The Leafs have a better chance of getting the number one pick than the Senators.
That certainly is a nice twist. I don't understand the people who are freaked out about it. Because, and it's a very simple thing, and I guess it speaks to a philosophy that you and I have about sports that I don't think everybody shares. It's only there to be interesting. Mm-hmm. It's not the World Health Organization. Like, it's not like if protocol is broken, you know, bad things happen. It's only there to be interesting. I actually love what they came up with here. And the numbers, like, apparently, I guess this was one of the highest percentages of things that could actually happen, was a team that would be still playing would have a shot at the number one. But this conversation has like totally opened up so many avenues of intrigue. Who could not like it unless you believe that there's some sort of sanctity that's being violated? And it's sports. There is no sanctity. It's only there to be interesting.
Yes, and also let's stay on the word sanctity. If it's all about the sanctity of the game, is tanking part of the sanctity of the game? Is not trying to field the best team to win as many games as you can? Isn't that part of the sanctity of the game? So to the tanking teams, bleep you, as I say that I still appreciate that Austin Matthews is here, so there's some hypocrisy there. But hey, you know, the great part is now Lafreniere isn't going to go to a crappy team that might stunt his development.
It's a really good point, too. And, I would love to see him go to Montreal, even though historically the Leafs fan base has always hated Montreal. It's been so long since that was a real rivalry. If something could help them to be good again, and it was sort of in the window that Toronto was really good, that can only be fun. You kind of hope Buffalo will catch up, too. All these local rivals, I mean, who doesn't want to feel on a Saturday night, you know, playing one of those teams that there's real stakes and real skin in the game, you know? It sucks being good at a time when you look down the road and you think, is our big rival going to be the Islanders? You know, that's okay, I guess. It's got some history to it, but it's not as fun as the Sabres, Sens, or Habs. I want these teams to get good because they've sucked long enough now that they've done their time in the penalty box. Now let them be good, and let's humiliate them on a bigger stage.
I see what you're saying, Bob, but you couldn't be more wrong if your head was shoved up your ass. Here's what.
Go for it.
Is that I'm here for interesting, and I'm here for fun, but the Leafs have still yet to win a playoff round. I'm okay if the Leafs somehow got this pick, and then they had a couple years kicking the shit out of everyone to the point where it gets boring. It'll never be as predictable as Golden State and basketball. I'm okay with a couple years of Toronto destroying everyone. You know, then let Buffalo and Montreal get good.
But Matthew, because my head is in my ass, I guess I didn't hear you right, but it sounded almost like you would rather lose that play-in round against Columbus and win a 12.5% chance at Lafreniere as opposed to win. Did I hear that correctly from my ear perched?
No.
Spot in my ass, you'd rather lose? To me, Bob, it's not an option.
Bob, tell your sphincter to turn the stereo down and listen to what I'm saying. I'm doing it in the spirit of, you want Montreal and Buffalo to get better? Bleep them. I want, obviously I want Toronto to go on a deep playoff run. But the idea of getting a 12.5% chance of getting Lafreniere, That's about as good of a loot bag as I ever would have got in the 80s at the end of a party.
Oh, Matthew, you... But in my scenario, mm-hmm. I'm presuming that the Habs will lose.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I'm presuming that the Leafs will win. And so, therefore, the option will never even fall to them. Because I want the Habs to get better, but I want the Leafs to be better now. So I'm not even considering the Leafs as a viable candidate for this, because that would mean horrible loss at the hands of Columbus, and I just don't want to deal with that, even for a shot at Lafreniere.
But would it really be horrible? We're all going to give whoever loses in the play-in round a bit of a benefit of the doubt, because we are dealing with nutty coronavirus. And also, Columbus had the same number of points as the Maple Leafs, despite leading the league in man games missed, or games missed by men, or however that stat is.
Games missed by men. That's really funny. I like that. No longer man games missed.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a weird phrase now that you pointed out. Man games missed. Couldn't you just say games?
Yeah.
Games missed by men.
Yeah, that's
I think you're underestimating this ability, this market's ability to turn on the Leafs. If they go out there and look bad, then people are going to be crying for somebody from the core four to get traded. You know it, and I know it. We all know it.
Oh, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. But here's the thing. If the Leafs lose, and that would suck, but then they get the number one pick, that would be great. Then we get to revisit the conversation of which forward needs to be traded, because you were too top heavy as it is. We get to revisit that, but now it's like a spicy new flavor. It's like a new flavor of Doritos.
Okay, you make a really good point. Okay, so let's take the Leafs out of the mix then. Which market do you want to see win this thing? If you could pick one and it's not going to be the Habs, who would you want to see win number one overall?
Maybe the Kings. You know, they built a team. They maintained for as long as they could. And, you know, guys get older and injured. And
the Kings already have number two.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, God. My bad. You know what? Columbus. They went all in last year. They knew they were going to lose all their players, but they didn't trade them at the deadline. And they got rewarded by beating Tampa and then got knocked out. And then Panarin and Bobrovsky said goodbye. They took a chance in the name of winning. So I'm going with the Blue Jackets.
I like that one. Part of me kind of wants Minnesota to win, even though I think that they handled themselves kind of poorly around the Bruce Boudreaux firing. But Minnesota's a really great hockey market, and it would be nice if they had a really good team there. Just they're almost like the American photo inverse of the Jets, like that Midwest Western market that has great fans that can't seem to win. That would be nice. I like your Columbus suggestion too. I feel like, you know, it's not that they got hosed because those players were going to leave, you know, Panarin and Bobrovsky. But like you, I agree. I'm glad that they went for it. And they're a fun organization for some weird reason. And I guess we just want Tortorella to be around because he's capable of saying something nuts, and that's always fun. So, yeah, that's a good suggestion. I like that, too. I kind of like Arizona as well. I'm waiting for Arizona to become really good because we need one of these stats-heavy teams to finally dominate.
But my pushback on that is stats-dominated teams leads to no triples or stolen bases. It's home runs. It's strikeouts. Well, I worry sometimes about that.
I agree. In baseball, it's proven to be kind of boring. But in hockey, I think it just means smaller, faster players.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're right. Okay. That's a good point.
And John Chayka, I don't know if he's a good GM or a bad GM, but I would just like to see how the hockey world would not root for him if he put together a really good team. They would be like the calculator villains. And I think we need a good calculator villain.
Yeah, I agree with that. We certainly have a lot of the ex-player swinging dick villains, but the calculator villain I'd be down for. I have one other answer. If I truly just want to be lazy with my job and mail it in, then I'm rooting for Edmonton. Because if Edmonton wins, I got a week's worth of shows. It writes itself.
Yeah, maybe even more. Yeah. Maybe even more. I hope Vancouver doesn't win, because, and I'm struggling here because I really like their young players, but historically have hated the market. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like the team, but I don't like the fans, so I'm not sure who to pull for there.
Yeah.
But they're a fun young team, and they're on the verge of being pretty damn good. Well, all I know is that for all the people out there who hated this, dude, lighten up.
Look, why
be so angry?
I see what you did there.
Thank you.
Listen, the only people that are angry are Detroit, Ottawa, and like Buffalo. But you know, the loser
Ottawa
teams
took it a bit on the chin there.
Yeah.
Pierre Dorion running around talking about how he's excited about the future. Not as excited as you could have been.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, drafts are so weird too. By the way, I wanted to point out, like, the two biggest leagues in the world don't have draft lotteries, in the sense that the NFL, you tank and you just rank them according to order of crap.
Yep.
And there is no draft in the English Premier League because, you know, you get relegated if you really suck. And frankly, you get better by spending money and there's no cap. And it's survival of the fittest in some kind of super capitalist shootout at the OK Corral. So this whole idea of a lottery, like, I kind of don't like it. I know this promotes tanking, but I sort of don't care in a way, because I think I like what the NFL does, in the sense that if you suck enough, you get the best player. It's a strategy, because it's, you know, there's not enough. It's pretty rare that you get a generational player in hockey or somebody good enough to actually make a huge impact right away. More often than not, you get a piece. So I don't even think the prize is always that big. Sometimes you get a McDavid, but you can get a Jack Hughes. You can get a Nico Hischier.
I still kind of like the lottery, you know, so that the bottom teams aren't always rewarded. And also these bottom teams, there's a reason why they're bad. You know, then you get like the Cincinnati Bengals or the bad teams getting to draft what could be really good players, but they get ruined in these horrible organizations.
You know, you made a good point about that with Lafreniere possibly going to a better organization than some of the really crappy ones. And I think that's a fair point. And maybe I'm willing to walk back my thoughts on the lottery a little bit, but
there's no perfect system. That's part of it.
I don't know. I also feel like it's also kind of weird that a team that's sort of in the middle of the pack should get rewarded too.
But a lot of times the middle of the pack team tried early on, then had injuries and a bad run, and suddenly they're in 11.
Look, I see your point, but it hasn't really hurt football that much, has it?
I
also think there should be strength of schedule.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, listen, football, it's funny. It's ironic. Football is the most socialist of all the sports, with pure strength of schedule. And, you know, if you're bad, we will help you as much as we can. And we're back. We had a slight pause. Conversation sort of ended with NFL and strength of schedules. We only got a couple minutes left. First, a quick shout out to our lawyer, our friend, and our sponsor. If you need a lawyer, I'm just going to keep this simple. His name is Jeff Pollock. He's our friend. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. So, Bob, yesterday's AMC question was a massive one. Favorite movies involving aliens, but it has to be where, you know, you're basically on Earth and then suddenly, like, an alien shows up. Like, it's not like they were always part of the world. So Star Wars, Star Trek, or Avengers movies don't count.
You mean E.T.?
Yeah, E.T. Yeah.
Or Cocoon or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay, so what was your list?
My honorable mentions: Galaxy Quest, The Faculty, Edge of Tomorrow, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Good list. The Day the Earth Stood Still is a really good one.
Yep.
Klaatu, Nick Barada. Mm-hmm. What else was really good for that? Cocoon was actually, maybe I'd have to see it again, but I remembered really liking it at the time.
Yeah.
With that it's like heartwarming Ron Howard for when Steven Spielberg's too tough for you. You go to Ron Howard. You don't like the grittiness of the Steve Spielberg experience?
Yeah, you need a little smoother, rounded edges.
Yeah, yeah, we're just going to backdraft this up.
Yep.
Let me think here. So
I'll give you my top five if you want to give me another second to think about it.
Wasn't that
those are my honorable mentions. My top five, the original Alien.
Yeah.
Predator, Men in Black, The Thing, and E.T.
Yeah, really good. I love the Predator pick. Excellent one. One of my favorite moments in all 80s cinema, Maddie, is when Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger see each other for the first time and they clasp hands and the photo frames their biceps.
Yep.
Both flexing as they're giving each other the handshake.
Oh, yeah.
And both of them have biceps that look like large potatoes.
Don't you wish you were on the movie set that day when they were discussing it with the director of photography and making sure they've got enough cocoa butter and just making sure everything is perfect for the zoom and all of that?
I remember once Jeff Merrick and I were going to go, we were going to meet this friend of ours, a female friend. We were in high school and we were all going swimming and he and I wanted to look more buff. So we actually like pumped weights before we went so we would look bigger. I think that this is the Predator set was that experience times a million.
Yes, I agree.
What is the greatest muscle conspicuous consumption scene of all time where like it's all just about showing off ripped bodies? I'm thinking about Rocky once again with Carl Weathers when they're running on the beach in Rocky 3.
Yep.
And they go slow-mo and their arms, just everything. They're just like two muscles running down the beach.
I would also throw anything involving Dwayne The Rock Johnson and the lead female protagonist in Deep Blue Sea.
Mm-hmm. See, those are, I'm thinking like just ridiculous.
Pure beefcake.
Yeah, pure beefcake. Like Schwarzenegger had some good ones.
Yeah.
You know, in Predator, no less. When he gets all mudded up and he's crawling around.
Oh, yeah.
Out in the mud and basically his underwear. Oh, man. Okay, so let's go back to your list.
Yeah.
E.T.'s the best, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Nothing even comes close. It's amazing when you hear Spielberg talk about it now and how much that movie was influenced by his parents' divorce.
Oh, I know. It is when you revisit it, he talks about it, that it's a family movie. It's a divorce movie. It's not an alien movie.
Dee Wallace is so good in that movie as the mom. And there's this underlying heartbreak. He's so good. Like, he's so good. But he's just so good at getting people to remember what it's like to be a kid. And not just in terms of the awe and the wonder, but also like the things you're afraid of, the things that make you sad. Like, I don't know if there's ever been a filmmaker that conjures up the feelings of being a kid quite like he does.
Yeah, I was trying to think in my head. No, that Spielberg owns that corner.
It's just because he's so popular, we'll probably never give him his due, but I think he's probably my second favorite filmmaker, just behind Kubrick. And there couldn't be two guys who are more opposite, and yet they were close friends. Spielberg once said, I would often give him my tricks. He never gave me any.
Really? That's a great line. And also not a shock at all.
Yeah, Kubrick was a nut.
Yeah.
Just so controlling, so demanding. But he also made the best movies ever, probably. I feel like I'm about to go on a real deep dive with movies again. I've been working on a lot of projects, and I haven't done film in about a year or so, but I think I'm going to write another one soon. So I think I'm about to go on a deep dive. Well, I've got a couple projects right now that are keeping me a little busy, but I miss writing a film.
Can you talk about these projects publicly on the podcast?
I can talk about one.
Ooh. Okay, we're out of time.
I guess we'll have to do it next time, Maddie.
Oh, damn you, Makowicz. Or should I say, damn you, Bob Kaepernick.
By the way, great callback and such a weird, fantastic idea. I think that should be your opening thought today, Matt.
Yeah. Oh, I've been thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, pal, it's good to catch up with you. I wanted to make sure that we had a chance to talk about all these sports because there was just a lot of cool stuff happening right now.
Yeah, there is.
I'm really not happy with the way that they hosed the Raptors with our playback schedule for playoff seeding. Could they have picked harder teams for them to play?
Bob, on the next podcast, I'll explain why the harder the schedule, the easier it is. That's coming on episode 175 of the Macko and Cause podcast.
Is 175 worth celebrating?
No, it's just divisible by five.
We're just going for the bicentennial?
That's it.
All right. Yeah. Okay, Maddie, well, always nice to catch up with you. Have a great Canada Day.
Yes, you as well. Happy Canada Day. Give my best to the fam, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
To you and yours, buddy.
Ch-ch-ca. Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.